I think that's good. Do you think we have a quorum? House will come to order. Members of the 61st, if you look in the South Gallery, you'll see students from our newest high school, South High. For those of you in the gallery, if you'd please stand up and give them a warm applause of welcome to the house. I was privileged 2 weeks ago to be a guest speaker at South High, and they have some interesting questions down there, let me tell you. All right. The next bill up for our consideration on Committee of the Whole is Senate File 33. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 33, introduced by Management, Audit, and Appropriations, an act relating to administration of government, Department of Enterprise, Technology Services. This bill was sent to number Committee 2, Number Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass with the ayes, Berger, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, no, Edmonds. Signed, representing Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 33 do pass. And we're going to have kind of a team here on presenting Senate File 33. We're going to start with the good representative from Johnson County who participates on management audit. And then we will have a representative from Cheyenne and a representative from Gillette help me with the bill.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All I want to do, ladies and gentlemen, is just give you a quick background of the genesis of how this thing ever got started. As vice chairman of the Management Audit Committee, I can give you from day one how it happened. But anyway, just briefly speaking, when we did an audit of that, it occurred started in 2010, went up through the middle of 2011, and that's when the report came out. And in a nutshell, what our findings were that it was probably our legislative mistakes in the past that kind of brought this about, but there were two entities that had oversight and management responsibility for IT in the state in the executive divisions, and one was called Information Technology Division, the other was the State Office of the Chief Information Officer. They both had their own statutes that they went by. But when you look at the statutes, they were intermingled, and responsibilities, there's two types of them. Sometimes the responsibilities were outlined in both sets of statutes. Sometimes they were blank and they weren't addressed at all. And this, of course, caused a lot of frustration on the part of people who are using IT services among all the other departments, because they didn't know who they're supposed to be dealing with and for what problems and what purpose and so on. So to make a long story short, we had this study done to see how we could improve the efficiency of IT in the state government. And there's three basic findings that we came up with. And one of them was security. And it was brought out in this management audit that security was all over the map from one department in the state to another department in the state, all the way from virtually no security over data and to redundant security in others. And we found a way in this bill, they found a way in this bill to have some minimum standard of security for each department, and each department will have the right to increase that security, but this sets the floor on how secure it's got to be depending upon what data they deal with. The other thing we found was the purchasing of hardware particularly, but also software was all over the map as well, and and I'm sure the Appropriations Committee learned that in their review of budgets over the years, that the same product was being bought from different vendors at way different prices, and they were budgeting different amounts for different or for the similar products from one to the other, and it just doesn't work. And one of the important things we also found was that it wasn't clearly defined in statute who was responsible for keeping track of inventory. And that was a concern. We don't know what the total inventories are. We don't know the exact location or whether, or maybe they do now, but they didn't before this process started. So anyway, that's the background of it. Section 2 here that starts quite early in the document, that's the input that management audit had. And I think that starts it ends on page 27, and so section 2 starts back early in the bill, on page 3. And that, if you read that carefully, you'll see that this bill mirrors pretty much the recommended corrections that management audit brought out. So that's all I've got now, and if there's any questions further on that, I'll be glad to answer them later. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The important thing about Senate File 33 is that it serves the common technology needs of the state agencies. And it requires the OCIO to work with those agencies. It mandates reporting to the legislature. It mandates quality control, technical training, privacy training. The OCIO will deliver common technology services and advice by bringing together the shared services and technology under one roof. What we can expect out of that process is cost savings on equipment and software. Just in procurement alone, this is kind of step one, you get the integrated system together. Step two can be procurement across state government that can drive enormous value. Efficient allocation of personnel services. You don't have every agency with a whole stable of specialized IT people when that can be more efficiently utilized across state government. Of course, those agencies are going to have their specialists, some agencies more so than others, to deal with secure databases, which are going to stay in those agencies. They're not moving to any central database or anything like that. They're staying where they are under the secure protections that they are under currently. It's going to remove duplication of efforts between agencies. Those shared support services for common systems. So if everyone's working on the same standard operating platform, you can have one help desk well manned with well-qualified technicians that can really serve the needs. And one of the frustrations that we all have heard in recent years is that the level of customer service to the agencies themselves was sometimes less than optimum. These measures should really make a difference in what kind of service the agencies are getting from our technology folks. Also, we'll have a better coordinated information security system so that those things that do need to be secure are secure and are not compromised. And enhanced reliability and accountability. This is going to offer a lot of transparency. It's going to allow the agencies themselves to better monitor and measure their effectiveness. It's going to allow the governor to be able to see what the whole picture is. It's going to give us, the legislature and the Joint Appropriations Committee, a much better handle on how things are being managed and measured across all of state government. So in the long run, we'll save money, we'll have more efficient, more effective service. Those things that are and need to be secure are still secure. We're not changing any policy of any agency. So all this has to do with is the technology systems. It's the tool to support the whole enterprise.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on the bill. Maybe explain, as any of this information we're going to be collecting in this huge comprehensive database going to be accessible by the private sector? I understand there's could be HIPAA issues in here. There could be confidential employee records, not access to that type information. But I saw some references to GIS information that would provide actually a lot of good information to the industries in Wyoming trying to help find more things that they can pay taxes on. So, again, please answer that question.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are many things that are maintained in our state databases that are appropriate for public use, and this system will actually make it easier for agencies that do have some data, but not all data, that can be accessible to a broader audience, and it will help them be able to do that. That being said, there is no huge central database being created of any kind. Those agencies that have servers and secure data now for whatever their mission is, Department of Health, Department of Natural Resources, or the DEQ, every agency, probably to a small extent, and some agencies to a huge extent, have information in their servers under existing law that is protected from the public view or anybody's view, and part of the OCIO's responsibility, and has been for years and is not going to change with this bill, is to make sure that those security systems are as secure as they can possibly be. This bill does not merge any of those databases. It doesn't create any sort of single database whatsoever.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One question I guess I would have is on page 14, line 16, I wonder what the definition of a state data infrastructure is. That would be one. And then another concern that I have, and maybe I'm having trouble finding it, but it seems like it should be in here someplace, something that helps keep the building of this thing under the purview of the legislature, making sure that we don't put too much power into the hands of a single person or persons. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Berger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and a good question.
basically, we should have probably started with this, but this entire bill is formalizing most of the practice that we do today in just moving the supervision and authority to the OCIO. So it was a process that we had to go through. So if you read the bill carefully, you'll see that most things that are in it are already in existing statute. I mean, we're already doing that today. And I've got a good compadre down there at the other end that will help me with that too. And this portion here from 15 to 21 was one of the main points of the management audit that we needed to keep in place. One of the good things that will be coming from this is a heightened training on security and privacy of data collected in each of the agencies. So we found that that was a critical component. Also, I think this may be the appropriate time for my member from Appropriations to move her amendment that helps with the authority level.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly to answer as best as I understand it, the question from the good representative from Natrona County on page 14, line 16, state data infrastructure. We have not defined that, and I suspect that might be a really good second or third reading amendment. We have defined a lot of other things, including data analytics, but we have never defined what a state data infrastructure is or is not, and I think that might go a long way in helping concerns as well. And, Mr. Chairman, if this is the appropriate time, Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole number 1 for Senate File 33 and ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment is just trying to get a little more transparency and perhaps a little more legislative oversight on what this new bill may or may not do in the years to come. So as you read the amendment, what it is asking for is simply a report on the 1st of November of each year to Appropriations Committee, letting us know and giving us a list of any federal programs being implemented by the department, either in whole or in part, so whether they're doing it as a whole under the OCIO, under their purview, which we're being told, we were told publicly that they would not do things like that, or in part, which would be their help in other agencies to do any kind of implementation, and we're asking for a list of both. And I think this just goes a long way in transparency. We'd all like to know in the years to come all the promises that have been made will be kept, and this is a good way to do that. So, Mr. Chairman, unless there are questions, I call for the question on the amendment.
Any discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1? Question being called. All in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just further discussion on the bill, and I had an experience, so it must have been 9 or 10 years ago, and for a number of years I was using a database that was made available, I think it was through UW or some sort of division of UW funded by the state and maybe some federal money. It actually tied a lot of different databases together. It was more a GIS system. And then all of a sudden, it was a great database. It tied information from the BLM, from the Forest Service, from the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation. You could go to one database and click on stuff and bring up all kinds of information. Then all of a sudden, the whole database disappeared. And after a couple of years of inquiries, I found out that the guy running the program had quit, and he took that work with him, whom the state had paid for. And I don't know really how this fits into this bill, but I just don't want stuff like that to happen. Because it really threw, I haven't used any of their databases since, because it just disappeared. And, you know, I'm sure something is good out there again. I just haven't had the time or the inclination to go into it. But again, this information is power, and information is decision making. And frankly, I just want to make sure whatever can be accessible by the private sector is to help make their jobs faster, easier, better to help generate the taxes that we have to collect here in Wyoming. Thank you.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you for the segue into that. I think that actually is part of the engine that has been driving us to consolidation. I mean, I'll be quite frank. We've been frustrated for years with agencies' budgets, with the amount that we spend on technology. We cannot even collectively figure out the entire amount. Keep in mind that 61% of the service that would be done by the OCIO is servicing all of our agencies. It's all the interagency work that's done in order to get that information out there. And that is certainly what I believe our committee's hope and many of us, that we will see that transparency, we will see that user-friendly, easier way to get information like that. One of our, the state engineers is one of those areas that we're very proud of, that we have spent an incredible amount of money in developing a system that is accessed by the public, that is used on a daily basis, that they can get all of their maps and their information and work on permits. And the same is what we've been doing with DEQ. But we want to be able to do this with all of our agencies. And for us, even as policymakers, I know how frustrated we are, and I would hope that that's a goal, too.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If this bill does what I think it's going to do, would do backflips. There are so many agencies that interrelate to each other, and yet the communication system between them is archaic. For instance, the Department of Family Services certifies if people are eligible for Medicaid and for the SCHIP program. And so people fill out a paper application, and then that is transmitted by a fax machine or hand-carried over to the Department of Health that administers the program. So I see a tremendous cost savings in us being able to share that information back and forth. Family Services is the one that does the eligibility because they're in every community. And I think that that's necessary. But I do have one question for Chairman Berger or whomever has the information, and that is, when we buy our legislative laptops, we kind of pick a one-size-fits-all, and this year it was a two-sizes-fits-all. But I don't think that every computer system is a one-size-fits-all. And are there safeguards in place that, I mean, I certainly know that when you have a CAD, computer-aided drafting program, that it requires a whole different type of system than the one that would, for instance, just enroll people in Medicaid and Medicare. I think that there are other systems that have different needs. And so as we're buying things in bulk and as we are trying to consolidate effort and certainly get bids, are we forcing agencies into one-size-fits-all, or are we seeing their needs? And question number two is, how much time does this add to the process of them procuring the systems that they need? I know just going through the procurement system for getting contractors to do studies is a lengthy and arduous process. Is that what it's going to be for our state departments as well? So those are my two questions. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that. Those two questions. The first one is in regards to an example, is that it was taking an agency employee 45 minutes to do the paperwork to buy a $12 mouse. That is just inefficiency of agency time. And so there's been a change there, and possibly with a review probably next year when we review this budget, we'll look at that with the OCIO in they've got a limit of $500. So that was one of the big complaints, really, among agencies, was the amount of time it took to go through a process of procurement for something like a mouse, also for getting service, what was involved there. And the third part of that is to do with equipment. And we notice, for example, if you took the Department of Family Services, it's a system in order to deal with applications for Medicaid. It's a specific program. And what happens, and if you looked at our agency budgets for this current budget request, you would see in each budget that the items that they desire or the work that they want to do with technology has been discussed with the OCIO. So collaboratively, they've done research on what their needs are specifically for their agency. Because we would like this place to be a one-stop shop, but it can't be everything to everyone. And there are specifics that have to be done within that agency, and there are certain software programs, et cetera, that need to be done. But what happens is he can help review with them to make certain that all the hardware that they're getting with this will all work, and I think get a good price for it. I mean, another example was just if you took a division that would buy 8 different printers for one office, when you could probably centralize that with one printer. And so every agency was doing that, and we just did not have a good way of getting a handle on inventory. Follow that up, we also realized that we have, in just in telecommunications alone, I mean, certainly OCIO or this group, the state is not trying to be a broadband provider or do any of those things, but is to work, again, collaboratively in finding the best telecommunication tools that will be effective for our agencies. So I think we're tying in a lot of different groups, and I think that that, again, is our goal, to provide that kind of service.
Okay. Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was a no vote on the bill, and I just want to be very brief. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time, but I do think that I'm duty-bound to speak my piece about my concerns about the bill and the good chairwoman previous to my chairwoman who spoke regarding some of the things she'd like to see the bill do is what causes my consternation, because I keep hearing mixed messages about what this bill will do, what it does do, what it isn't going to do, and it all really centers around the idea of a state data infrastructure and enterprise data analytics. And those are the two points that I think are the most critical, that have nothing to do with the big selling point that's been put on this bill that we all have been parroting, which is that it's going to save the state money and we're going to be able to buy laptops cheaper and we're going to, and those are all, that's a separate issue to other things that are in this bill. That's in this bill. But there's a whole second layer of issue, and it all has to do with data infrastructure and data analytics. And all that I can say is that it is very clear to me, and it is extremely logical, that where we are going with this is a statewide, singular data infrastructure that has all data pooled, because it's the only, first of all, economical way to go once you start down this road, is to pool all of the information together. And when you have words and things in the bill that, such as establish policies and standards for enterprise data analytics, enterprise meaning everybody or more than one, so it's hooking people together, you're headed down the road to a singular data system. And I think we all just need to be aware of that. I think that's a tremendously huge undertaking, and we heard testimony in appropriations from members of our military and ex-members of different branches of the military and the federal government who talked about what they have seen in the federal government, and other states that have done this can testify, and European nations that have done this can testify, to the amount of hacking that goes on and the amount of privacy issues that happen when you place all of your constituents' private information in one system. It basically plants a huge target on the back, and all the little, I don't know, teenagers or whoever's out there hacking and selling and making money, it gives them one place to go. And we're a small state, and you know your neighbors, and you know your constituents, and you know how much they value their privacy. We all do. And the kind of damage that can happen to your constituents if their private information is leaked out. So that's one huge concern that I see that I can't even get addressed, because we can't seem to get to a place of acceptance that that's where we're headed. If we could get to that place, then I think we could speak logically to privacy and other issues about how we're going to handle a state data infrastructure that puts everything together. And then the second piece was already spoken by another member, which is simply that data is power. And, you know, he who controls the data controls the power. And I hope that the future legislators sitting in our chairs down the road that have to deal with this issue will, first of all, make this data at its most base level, so raw data, available to all of the people in the state. Because anyone can manipulate data to come up with their answer. A priori reasoning. It's very easy to do, and anyone can do it. I think we have to have rules in place that allow consumers and all the people of the state to see that data in its raw form. So those are my concerns, and that's why I will continue to be a no vote. I don't feel like we can get to a place where we can just have an honest conversation, because I keep hearing two different things about what this bill does and doesn't do. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With all due respect, the data infrastructure lack of definition here was probably an oversight, because what is being referred to as the data technology infrastructure is that hardware and that software that is, it's like our road system, it's like our telephone system, it's our technology system that has the pieces and the gadgets and the power that's necessary to run the pieces and gadgets, and the software that's necessary to tell the pieces and gadgets what their job is. That's the infrastructure. This bill does not create in any way, shape, or form a single gigantic database. It doesn't do that. All it does is provide for a common management of those things that every agency is already using. If one agency is using something that no agency, other agency uses, it doesn't touch it. It stays the way it is. So information that is only used by the health department stays in the health department. Nobody else gets to touch it. If it's information that is only used in the Department of Environmental Quality and nobody else in state government uses it, it doesn't get touched. But it's only those things like email, like software applications, like the common tools that every agency uses. That's what this bill is talking about. So I just want to make that clear. No gigantic databases anywhere in this bill.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we probably beat this bill to death, but I want to ask one question. I note that there's going to be about 121 folks in the OCIO's purview or budget. Are these people going to be consolidated somewhere, or are they going to stay out there in the hinterland, so to speak, with the departments, and they just kind of report to the OCIO? I don't want to see us grow government any more than we have to, and I hope this is, instead of growing, I hope this really kind of shrinks some things. Can you answer that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that question. And
Chairman Berger.
Certainly that is not the intent to grow the agency, and this is a bill that's, it's in phases, really. I mean, in the next year, it's continued conversations. I mean, it's taken a lot of time just to get to this bill right here, Senate File 33. I think through attrition and with the efficiencies of technology, there will be less FTEs. There will be experts out in the field. I mean, it wouldn't make sense to make someone that's in the northern part of the state move here to the Capitol. So that's one component of it. But what you have is an OCIO that is kind of like the traffic cop, and he's directing all of these different people with communications and providing those services. So, you know, I guess that's our hope. We think that with technology advancement that we are going to see a reduction in the number of staff. It's going to be a much more efficient way of handling those services. And I don't see us growing it. I see us actually continuing to save more money. And I did want to, you know, kind of respond to one of my members from Appropriations in that there could be another phase, but I see that as another phase that we all have to look at. I see it first coming to JAC, because because that's where this is being housed as far as it being managed and reviewed. And then if it does move forward in another component, it comes back to both the House and the Senate to have a review for the next phase, in my view. So I think it's going to take us a while just to get through this bill of ideas. So,
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. This is what I do in my real life when I'm not here. This is a good move for the state. There are some things inside the OCIO's office that I don't agree with, but they're not related to this bill. The bill, in essence, would allow some consolidation. This is what we desperately need in this state to get everybody on the same page with some leadership. It would involve some people at a managerial level being in control of large sections of data, or at least managing that data, not necessarily the elements or the pieces inside those databases, but how it's managed with inside the enterprise. That's the entire state network and how the access is there. You desperately need to go here. Otherwise, we will be running around in circles, chasing our tails, and wasting a lot of the taxpayers' time and money on antiquated systems that don't talk to each other and creating problems for us down the road. So unless every one of you inside this legislative body want to become expert in data management, systems management, and all of that other stuff, you need to bite the bullet and allow experts in the field to run this for us.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've had three excellent presentations on the contents of this bill. I would just draw your attention back to page one, where this was the Management Audit Committee that sponsored the bill. They did so after having a study, and that study was the looking at all of the technical services, how it's being done now, and how it could be better done in the future. It is not a part of a combination of taking anything from another department and combining it into a massive something or other that is horrendous in our minds, but rather it provides a management system just as the good representative from Laramie County just stated to you, by experts. We accepted the information, found ourselves in the position of a very, very detailed study, and put it all together in the proposition that you have before you, which I support.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to call your attention real quickly to a couple of unique pieces in this bill that don't exist today. A great deal of this is already in place under ANI, under the OCIO. It's moving over into its own department. On page 4, beginning with line 13, where you're talking about the department divisions, you'll see that under this new department, we're going to have two separate divisions. First one is the Information Technology Division. Those are the guys who are putting together the hardware and the software and making the systems work. Secondly, we have the Information Services Division. And that's the division that will be supplying that much-needed customer service to our agencies and to our citizens. The other thing I wanted to point you toward is on page 12, between lines 11 and 21, is a new section of this bill that deals with establishing, maintaining, and annually evaluating a quality management model that's going to look over this whole thing and make sure that it's doing what we intended to do and in the proper fashion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Berger?
Mr. Chairman, I think I've heard a call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 33 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Senate File 33 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill, Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Granted.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the South Gallery, it is my honor to introduce someone down from Washakie County, finally. Now that's 2-0 on your license plates, not 20, 2-0, second to none. So if he would please stand, Terry Sutherland, the director of the Warland 10 Sleep Chamber of Commerce, and give him a welcome to the People's House.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While our attention is trained on the South Gallery, a couple folks I'd like to introduce from Park County. First, in standing up, Craig Kenyon is the executive director of the Powell Valley Chamber of Commerce. These folks are down for business day at the legislature. And then in the front row, Kim Capron from Cody, longtime chamber manager. She also happens to be president of the Wyoming Chambers Partnership. Stand up, folks.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Granted.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, while we're all standing, our executive director for Chamber of Commerce in Saratoga, Wyoming, Carbon County, is Stacy Crimmins, right in the front there.
Chairman Illaway, privilege is granted.
No, I'm waiting to present a bill. That's... Time is fleeting, Mr. Chairman. Let's move.
All right. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 62. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 62, introduced by Senator Cooper, an act relating to licensing for electrical installations. This bill is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, signed, representing Illaway, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 62 do pass. There are no amendments, and the good gentleman from House District 18 will present the bill.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to let you know that I have my basketball tie on. The Pokes won last night and got the 20th victory. A couple of our legislators were over there watching it. Said it was a great game. Very few turnovers. Okay, back to Senate File 62. This bill comes to us as a result of the Wyoming Electrical Cooperatives working with the State Electrical Inspector's Office to provide the exception to a permit that their linemen do when they're servicing the entrance equipment beyond the meter without infringing on the licensed electrical contractors doing the things that they would normally do. This bill is because there's a safety issue working with the State Electrical Inspector's Office and the cooperatives, and also an expediency thing. You have a handout that's in color, thanks to the REA folks. Didn't even cost us. If you pull that out, you can see what we're talking about. We have a telephone pole there, and the little arrow that has the 120 and 240 going to it is where the electricians will work. Right above it with the yellow arrows are 7,000 volts. They can go up to 24,000 volts. And the local electricians really don't like working close to those. And if you'll turn that over, if you have it out, there's also on the opposite side, instead of on the pole, this is an on-the-ground base hookup. And if you look at the left side, there's the 7,200 volts again. On the right side are the load side, or the side that goes into the local homes. And you can see the close proximity of both of these. And this one goes underground, the other one stays on top of the ground. And in this bill, we're just trying to help out as there's emergencies or there's new hookups being done, that the REAs can work and not be, the electricians aren't placed next to these big voltages. So Senate File 62 would provide two exceptions for the electrical cooperatives to work. And by the way, some other agencies that have this ability right now, the oil and gas, the liquid petroleum, and the cable, they have the ability to do this. So the REAs that service a lot of local work don't have it. If you'll turn to page 2 of your bill, section A, it talks about making, as they're working on the high voltage lines, it gives them the authority to make the connections going to the service areas, both underground and overhead. And because it's such high voltages, local electricians really aren't too excited to be working next to these high voltages, and they don't mind. And again, this is reviewed and approved by the state electrical inspectors. And this was one of the changes. And then the other one was in the winter when there's outages and the REA is there fixing, whether the pole's blown down or whatever, they, in fixing theirs, have been asked to just hook up the line going into the home. And right now, they do not have that authority to do this. So this is what this bill would do, is give them the authority to hook up the load line or going into the home. And everybody that testified in committee, including the state electrical inspector's office, said this was a good piece of legislation and just kind of helped things be done without harming any local electrician's work.
Any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Elway's motion, the committee of the whole rises to report it. Do so with a recommendation that Senate File 62 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate File 62 is passed, committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 47. Reading clerk will read the bill.
25, I think.
How about we do 25, reading clerk? Thanks.
House Bill 25, introduced by the Judiciary, an act relating to public records. This bill was sent to the Judiciary Committee, which recommended it do pass. Ayes: Barbuda, Bechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Throne, No, Peasley, signed Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 25 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendments.
Committee of the whole amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Committee of the whole amendment. And I will explain the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Proceed.
This is a modification to Section 16.4201 of the Wyoming Statutes, which has to do with definitions within public records, and with 16.4202, which has to do with the right of inspection and regulations and rules and regulations associated therewith for the inspection of public records. It makes changes as follows. In the definitions on page 2, it completely rewrites the definition of public records and becomes more comprehensive, includes electronic records, and includes other physical form received by the state or any agency in the furtherance of public business, and includes information received at a meeting or outside of a meeting, either way. It also adds a definition of application, which is the applications that's to be made by the media or other, I think it typically be the media, but wouldn't always be the media, for that information. And information is defined on page 3, beginning at line 6, and it's very comprehensive. Opinions, facts, data of any kind in whatever physical form kept or maintained, including but not limited to written, oral, visual, electronic, or other physical means. It then goes to section 16.4202, which is the section of the statutes about the right of inspection. It, on page 3 at lines 15 and 16, it just adds a provision that records are open for inspection during business hours of the state entity or political subdivision. On page 4, beginning at line 4. Well, let me see. On page 4, it discusses two situations. Paragraph B is a situation where the public records requested are not in the custody or control of the person to whom application is made, and in that event, the custodian or authorized person has 7 days from the date of acknowledged receipt of the request of the unavailability to give notice of the unavailability of the records, unless there's good cause shown in which that case that time can be extended. And if the applicant's not satisfied with the explanation that's given, they're permitted, that's at lines 11 through 13, they're permitted to petition the district court for a determination about whether the responses given by the custodian is satisfactory or not. Then starting at line 15 on page 4, which is paragraph C, it addresses the other situation where public records requested are in the custody and control of the person to whom application is made, and but are in active use or storage. And in that case, again, there's a 7-day period to respond to the request, unless good cause is shown preventing a response within that time period. And if the applicant's not satisfied that good cause exists, in other words, not satisfied with the application, again, the applicant can petition the district court for a determination about whether that's good cause or not. And then it has the final proviso beginning at line 3 on page 5. It says, if a public record's readily available, it shall be released immediately to the applicant, so long as the release does not impair or impede the agency's ability to discharge its other duties. So it covers all situations. Situations where a request is made and the records aren't immediately available, within 7 days there's got to be a response back that says, we don't have the records, it's going to take so long to get the records, we'll make them available within a certain time, whatever it may be. If they fail to do that, the applicant's free to go to the district court and test I don't think they'd fail to do that, but if the applicant's not satisfied with the explanation, they're free to go to the district court and test that explanation. If it is in the custodian's possession, but the custodian says, look, we're using it, or it's in storage, I got to have some time, whatever it may be, within 7 days, they're required to give a response, whatever it may be. And again, if the applicant's not satisfied with that response, the applicant's free to test the validity of that response in the district court. And finally, the provision, if it's readily available, give it to them. Then we get to page 5, which deals with 16.4203, and it goes to paragraph D, where a custodian can deny inspection of certain kinds of records. And beginning on page 6 at line 4, is basically a whole section that has to do with agricultural records. And this allows the custodian to deny a request for information about an agricultural operation, farming, or conservation practice if the information was provided by a producer or owner of agricultural land in order to participate in a program of the state or any agency. And this is directed toward many kinds of farm programs where a lot of sensitive information about privately owned land has to be provided to an agency, and the purpose of this is to protect that from access by the public, except under certain very limited circumstances. There's a lot of information, geospatial information about possible triggers under the Antiquities Act, possible triggers under the Endangered Species Act with respect either to wildlife or to habitat, and groups have accessed this information in the past to shoehorn themselves into a way to ask a federal agency to take jurisdiction over private ground. And if the only purpose that information was given for was to participate in a program, then it's protected under this act. And again, that is subject to being tested in the district court if there's a dispute about whether it meets that criteria or not. Finally, on page 9, something that's near and dear to my heart. In both this act and another act about public meetings that's coming, we've decriminalized this procedure, which I never agreed with. I don't like making or threatening the potential for a public official to be deemed a criminal because they failed to act under this. I just don't think that that's what we're trying to accomplish here. So this changes it to a civil penalty. And a public official who violates the provisions of the act is liable for a penalty up to $750, which can be recovered in a civil action, and damages can be assessed by the court if there's damages over and above that. And one of those actions must be initiated by the attorney general or the appropriate county attorney. It can't be initiated by the public at large. So if there's a complaint and someone contends that an official has wrongfully withheld information under this act, then their avenue of complaint is to either the attorney general or the county attorney, and they have prosecutorial discretion to bring the action or not as a civil action if they think it's appropriate. With that explanation, Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions. And if there are none, I call for the question. But I see there is.
I think we're on the committee of the whole amendment officially, Chairman Brown.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Talk about that.
And I don't have that amendment in front of me. Give me just a second. And, Mr. Chairman, at this time I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25. It's on page 2 at the bottom of the page, and it says it's in the paragraph that begins on line 16 on page 2. Without limiting the foregoing, public records includes all this information received by a state or any other agency, institution, or political subdivision. And then right at the end it says whether at a meeting or outside a meeting, and then the language appears of the body right at the bottom of page 2. Well, some of those may not be what one would technically term a body, and that language seemed to be superfluous. So Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 would simply delete the words of the body, and I would move that amendment at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Seeing none, all in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are back on the bill. Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question. On page 6, do we have any other definitions of agriculture or operation or producer in statute? Is this going to maybe affect any other piece of legislation? Or, you know, a lot of times we put definitions in and then we pass other legislation or we have other legislation. So I'm just wondering what the nature of these definitions were. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you where this language came from. It was lifted directly out of the Federal Freedom of Information Act. And so we simply adopted, and it's been pointed out to me, perhaps with one exception that we're taking a look at, but it, aside from one sentence that maybe was omitted, this is a direct mirror of the language or the exception that appears in the Federal Freedom of Information Act. That's the best explanation I can give.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for Mr. Chairman, two very different questions. The first came from our school district when we were having dinner the other night, and they were very concerned about the about having email discussions regarding kids, especially kids that are in trouble with non-custodial adults, such as a grandparent. And so they're curious, and I would imagine, about how to interpret the statute as it now exists in relationship to page 2, lines from 15 and 16, when talking about any information which is now defined as an email message, then you go down, which is not privileged or confidential by law. And then when you look at 16.4.203.D.6, Romanet 8, one of the exceptions is school records, but it's very specific. It says school district records containing information relating to the biography, family, physiology, religion, academic achievement, and physical or mental ability of any student, except to the person in interest or to the officials duly elected and appointed to supervise him. So again, they're concerned about how to look at that exception regarding school records in relationship now to kind of the opening up of the definition of information when it's set with the exception of when it's privileged by law. So that's my first question. And do you want me to throw you my second question? Okay. My second question is regarding the definition of who is covered by this? Who is affected? And specifically, are we as the legislature exempt from this bill? And if so, why?
Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As to the first question, I pressed the presenters of the bill pretty hard, specifically in three areas that were raised by the school district that I think make a lot of sense, that they ought to be privileged. And those are, number one, what if there's something about incest going on? Number two, what if there's something about abuse going on? And number three, what if there are some gender identity problems that are starting to surface with the child and the school district's made aware of it? Is that public information? Is that information that could be obtained under this act? Now, to be honest with you, I didn't drill down into it completely. The answer I got from the media presenters was that information is protected by federal law. And I think I'm satisfied with that explanation, that there are federal laws with respect to minors, and state law too, with respect to sex offenders, minors, all sorts of things that protect that information, and that's why this language is in here. Which is not privileged or confidential by law. And so if it's privileged or confidential by law, it's not going to be disclosed under this. And I don't think that those issues are disclosable today, and I don't see this bill changing the law with respect to disclosure of any of that information. With respect to the second, specifically, is the legislature accepted? No. And I don't have the statute in front of me, but the representative might recall that this was an issue with the legislature at one time, and the legislature passed a law that exempted itself. It was vetoed, and then the veto was overridden. And that is the law today, that it is exempted.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, going back to page 6, some questions about the withholding information provided by the agricultural producer. And in that one paragraph, the sentence starting page 9, going through to page 12, or line 12, talking about GIS, geospatial information, and thinking about some of the services provided by agencies or programs of the state. Of course, that list would include our Natural Resource and Wildlife Trust, water development. And I guess my first question would, if someone were to request a map, perhaps, of a conservation easement, to find out the location and purpose of it, would that information be withheld by our director of the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust? And further, to build on that, you know, as far as technical assistance provided as a result of the information, either gained publicly or privately, is anything going to change as a result of this bill where information that perhaps was available today with the implementation of this bill, would information about a cross fence being installed for grazing or wildlife purposes be redacted? Would information about a pipeline that water development participated in, would that information be withheld? And I guess to further build on that, the reason I'm asking this, Mr. Chairman, is to I think it's important for us to document a strong public benefit with these expenditures of public dollars. I've mentioned this before, that without access to this information, if anything were to change with this bill, it would be important to reveal that today.
Chairman Brown.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I got that sprung on me about 15 minutes ago, and I've been digging through the statutes trying to get a definitive answer, and frankly, I cannot provide one. As to pipelines, conservation easements, and those sorts of encumbrances on land, they are not binding in the chain of title, nor are they binding on the public. In other words, they're not constructive notice unless they're recorded in the office of the county clerk. And all the public records in the county are available for public inspection. Now, that I admit that might beg the question whether those are public records or not and whether the court can disclose them. And I don't know the answer to that. And my best suggestion is that if there's sufficient concern, then somebody bring an amendment to the bill to accept that information out. But realize that's a two-edged sword two ways, because that information can be pulled out. But as soon as you, for instance, talk about a pipeline, for instance, a pipeline that runs through the checkerboard, the feds have determined that if it crosses federal land, that's a federal action, and all federal actions have to have scrutiny under, for instance, the Antiquities Act. And so that, by that method, the feds are shoehorning their way onto private property to look for items that qualify under the Antiquity Act. And so then that information goes into a state agency somewhere. And so then the question is, which way is it going to cut? The individual's private property rights have already been violated because there's been an inspection under the Antiquities Act when they never had any intention for that to go on. And now what are you going to do with that violation? If some information is developed, are you going to make that public so that some group that's motivated that way can use that information for nefarious purposes or not? So that gets to be a very dicey deal, and I know a lot more about the problem than I do about the solution, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little follow-up on that. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that example being used. Of course, I don't think anyone would want information revealed. Perhaps if there's a good example of some teepee rings on this hill behind someone's house, we don't want that information disclosed, just so that person can develop a spring near there and bring that down for some off-site water developments away from a riparian area. And, of course, if we're trying to demonstrate wildlife public benefits, we really don't have to document and release information of exact locations of a lek. But at some point, we do need to make sure we don't hide or withhold information that is absolutely necessary to document that strong public benefit. And, of course, I think some of the court cases that have been established, some of the examples were when a wolf was killed on someone's private land, you don't have to exactly say the exact location of that, but somehow we have to have some information available. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Kordberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After digesting a little bit of the Committee of the Whole amendment, I'm just going to have the good chairman of Judiciary. I'm a little concerned that we've deleted of the body, and I'm trying to read this. It's a very long sentence ahead of it, but I want to make sure that I'm understanding that I'm not misreading or misinterpreting what we've just done. But I guess my concern now is by deleting of the body, that if you have two out of seven council members having a conversation or having a meeting, or they're outside a meeting in the coffee shop and they're exchanging documents, by deleting of the body, we have now made them subject to the Public Records Act. So I'm a little concerned now that we have deleted of the body out of page 2, lines 23 and 24. So maybe the good Chairman of Judiciary could help me with that. Thank you.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, the best I can do is provide the explanation. This came to me as a suggestion from the attorney for the Judiciary Committee meeting, and it seems to be redundant and unnecessarily limiting, because the sentence starts out at line 16, without limiting the foregoing, the term public records includes all this stuff that's listed. Then on page 19, received by the state or any agency, institution, or political subdivision of the state. Well, some of those are bodies and some aren't. And so you get down to the bottom and you say, whether at a meeting or outside a meeting, of the body. Well, the concern is that of the body might be a term of limitation. And so if you were one of those things up there, the state or an agency, institution, or political subdivision of the state, but you're not a body, and it's received at a meeting or outside a meeting of the body, then that information wouldn't be made available when that's not the purpose of it. And so it seems that that language is redundant, and if you just say whether at a meeting or outside a meeting, period, then it's more inclusive. It's broader than it would be if it says of the body. That's the best I can do, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As many, many years ago, way back when I was in a different kind of elected office, we started, as this legislature started adding more and more things that said, you can't do this without it being considered a meeting. And what brought me up was the two councilmen getting together and exchanging or even talking about things. And that kept going on and on. And as I see this bill has tried to bring more definition and clarity to the things that have been there, kind of, you know, in the dark places. And every time we go to court or every time we go to a judge, from the media decide they want something, why generally the courts have been saying, yeah, you got to do that. This is to, as I see it, to try and clear it up. And please correct me if I'm not wrong, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct, and gives me an opportunity to say that this is the work of many people besides the legislature. And when we met early in the summer, all the constituents groups were there, and it was quite, I think it'd be fair to say it was quite a rodeo. And it was going nowhere because of all the competing claims and the acrimony and the competing ideas. On their own, the major constituent groups, which were, I don't know whether I can mention the names or not, but anyway, cities and towns, counties, and the media, on their own, scheduled a meeting in a different part of the state at a different time, and it was well attended. All the constituent groups were there, and they started hammering this thing out and airing all of their grievances against each other without the necessity of observing the niceties of a legislative meeting. And they hammered and hammered and hammered and came back with this product and said, this is what we have, and they said, frankly, none of us are happy with it. But we think you ought to pass it because it is a resolution of all our differences to the extent that we think it can be done. And I have thanked them for that and told them that, in my opinion, that's how legislative conflicts like this ought to be resolved. And I will tell you, just from the rodeo that we got into at that one meeting, in my opinion, this is a better job of resolving all the conflicts and arriving at a product where nobody got everything they wanted, but everybody can live with. This is a better job than we ever could have done as a legislative committee. So that's where we sit today.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 25 do pass, please say aye. All those opposed say no. Senate File 25 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 47. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 47, introduced by the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects. This bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, sign representing Berger, Chairman.
Also referred to Ag. Okay. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Sumlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 47 do pass. I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from House District 39.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You should all have a handout here. It'll help you follow along. I bring you, members of the 61st Legislature, Senate File 47. This is a construction part of the Omnibus Water Bill. And on your handout that you have, you'll see the first group that is all new development. And shows the counties, where the accounts come from, the terms. This year, Water Development Commission teamed up with the SLIB board, and some of the funding on some of these comes from the SLIB board on the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund. Other comes from the Mineral Royalty Grant. The amendment on the Senate, if anybody has any questions on that, that's going to help deal with the situation up in Pavilion. And that's at the bottom of that first group. This middle group is the rehabilitation programs, mostly canal improvements and dam outlet works, and a tunnel replacement up in Bighorn County. And the bottom one is projects that have already been appropriated. They like to phase these projects. So these are the bottom ones that have already had work done, and this is like the second phase or the final phase of the program. And I'd be open to any questions concerning Senate File 47.
Questions on the bill, Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. In the bill on page 6, talking about the project letter G, the Gillette Regional Extension for $11,100,000, I don't see that on this sheet. And could you relate that into the Madison Water Project? Do they fit together? How are we doing with that? How are they combined? Thank you.
Chairman Sumlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That item G underneath there provides the kind of the framework for that regional project up there, and it's just a part of that continuing project for the Madison up there. And I'm kind of stumbling around here, but this really includes the work that, as it was described to us, the distribution system that goes around the city, and they needed to get those design and construction pipelines and apertures necessary to make the project function in a manner intent. That's in Romanet 3. That's not a great explanation of that, but that's what those funds are for.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Do I hear a question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Sumlich's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so, the recommendation that Senate File 47 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. Senate File 47 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Please move Senate File 40 until after Senate File 10. Senate File 40 until after Senate File 10.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 10. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 10, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to the Military Department Youth Challenge Program sunset date. This bill is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Korberg, Frownish, Swanitzer, Dave, signed, representing Korberg, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 10 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the good Vice Chairman of Transportation. Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 10 is being brought. They had, as you could hear from the reading clerk, unanimous support out of the Transportation Military Affairs Committee. It proposes to do one thing, and that is to extend the Youth Challenge Program sunset date from June 30th, 2012 to 2017. And as we looked at this and heard testimony of it, it was unanimous testimony in support of this piece of legislation. Just 3 points I'd like to bring up on this Youth Challenge Program. First, looking at it from a military perspective, it came into being in 2006. It's maintained over at Camp Guernsey. It's with the National Guard. And what it does, it mentors at-risk youth in an effort to help them become productive American citizens along the way. The military department has operated the program in a funding partnership with the National Guard Bureau. And that has been a real plus for us over the period of time. It's a voluntary program. It's for youth ages 16 to 18. Say that again, 16 to 18, that have dropped out of school or are in danger of becoming involved in criminal justice system unless there's strong intervention, because they are on a downward spiral if there is not something that steps up to it. Just a few notes here. 91% of the youth come from Wyoming that go into the program. And a few of these are from out of state because they have Wyoming connections, either parents or grandparents have seen the benefits of prior youth, so therefore they recommend that some of their out-of-state youth come into it. We have graduated 308 students out of the 409 starts. Remember, it's a voluntary program. It's a 75% graduation rate. If you look at the high school graduation rate in Wyoming, it's right around 80-81%. So we feel that this is a real step in the right direction. The next thing is 93% of the graduating students, and this is one of the highlights of this program, have no further contact with the criminal justice system. And that's a real success in that particular regard. If you look at it from the legal perspective, two things come to pass. One of the biggest problems that the justice system has is how do we handle juveniles? It's always a struggle. It's always an issue. There's various treatment programs, various options that the judiciary can work with. But one thing that is always at the forefront is how can we best rehabilitate, make these young people come on a path that will make them productive citizens. This is one tool that can be used. We heard testimony from individuals that were there that are in support of this from the judicial viewpoint. It's a valuable resource that we can do. They can impose certain kind of restrictions or sentence, if you would, and it can be held in abeyance if the young man or young woman attends the 5.5-month course that we have over at Camp Guernsey. And then when that's completed, the appropriate action is taken to dismiss the charges. And that has been a real viable entity for us, a cost-saving measure for the judiciary, for various other programs that some of these juveniles can be entered into. The other point I'd like to bring up from the students' perspective, you just look at the success ratio, and we've had testimony not only yesterday but on other factors where these various youth have been well received into the communities. They come in without a record on them. They feel a feeling of self-worth. We find that 11%, and there's a tracking factor that takes place here after they go through the program. 11% of graduates go into the military service, which is a natural thing because, of course, they have the mentors that are there and they're in the military environment. 20% of the graduates become employed, and that's an important thing because they have some work ethics that's put upon them, some discipline, and some other things that will add to their lifestyle. 31% of the graduates went on to additional education, either into trade schools, or some of them enrolled in our secondary school system within the state. 32% we do not know because we could not track them and see really what happened with it. The final thing I'd like to bring up is the savings aspect of this. We had a sheet or information that was provided to us, and we found the following, that it costs us $105 a day for these youth challenge programs per individual, 63% provided by the state on the existing program, 42% by the federal. Whereas if we look at the boys' school, it's $268 a day. The girls' school is $256 a day. And then we have other avenues that is the residential treatment centers or group homes, and those are vary from $133 to $366. This program, the JAEC, heard testimony on it and took action on it, and it's approved in the budget. It is found on page 14 that the JAEC took place up with. Now, there's one thing that we want to modify on the program, is that there are two starts a year. That means that there's a group that's entered in, let's say hypothetically in January, 5.5 months later, they are graduated out of the program. And there's a problem with that, because if only two starts take place, the next one, there's a period of time that has to go by. It's generally several months. What do you do with these youth when they're in this mode here? For example, one commits some kind of offenses. He is under court supervision, basically. And what do you do with them, and where do they go in this period of time? Because from my personal experience working with juvenile-type matters, they tend to repeat their behavior. And as a result, it just compounds the problem. So what we're proposing here also in this program, so that the body's aware of it, that there'll be four starts a year. In other words, once this safety net will be coming through, be about 10 days from the day of an offense until they would be eligible to go into another program at Camp Guernsey. So that's really where we're at. I firmly believe in the program. If any of you have seen Camp Guernsey and some of the facilities we have over there, you will see these young men and women around from time to time as they go through their programs. They've invited us to their graduations, and some of our committee members have done that. So with that, I will stand for any questions.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good explanation of and good description of the program, a little bit aware of it. I just a question for this program and maybe some others we might think about. Do the parents or guardians have any obligation to pay according to their income?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the testimony we received, the answer to that was no, because there's federal pay that goes forward, there's state pay that goes forward. The only pay that I'm aware of that a guardian or a parent would have would be for personal amenities that they would add to the program, but actually writing a check or providing financial resources for their ward, if you will, to go through the program is not...
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Corbett's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 10 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Senate File 10 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 40. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 40 introduced by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to the judicial salaries. This bill was referred to committee number two, appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. No, Edmonds, Escobar. Signed, representing Berger, chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 40 do pass. And what I have before you is the Judicial Salaries Bill. And this is in regards to increasing salaries for Supreme Court, District Court, and Circuit Court judges. The reason that we're bringing this bill is that it's we have to address it in a constitutional way with their salaries. And it has been the last implementation of salary increases, if you look on page 2, were July 1st, 2008. And so what this bill is doing is making increases on lines for the Supreme Court, line 9, that would be in effect July 1st. So it would be an increase from $131,500 to $165,000. And on district courts, which is on page 2, line 17, it would increase from $125,200 to $150,000. And then on circuit court, the way it's written in the engrossed version of the bill is to have it increase from $102,800 to $110,000. And just as soon as I finish the bill, I'll just move a standing committee amendment. What has happened, ladies and gentlemen, is the, and I wanted to just give you that, with the standing committee amendment, if that were to pass, it would be $3,649,397 to make these increases. And really what's happened with the judicial branch is trying to adjust the salaries that have fallen far behind really our state employees for the last 20 years. So the gap has increased considerably. I would agree that there is no time to discuss salary increases, but we have found that this is one area that we have just not paid attention to, and we have to go through this process in order for them to get their increases. One of my concerns that in listening to the testimony and talking to various people is that just in district court alone, we have 22 judges, and most probably within the next 5 years, we'll have 11 that will retire. And I think most of you are well aware that you don't go to judge school to get trained up. You typically are a practicing attorney in one of our communities, and you apply for the judgeship. And they go through a review system, and someone is chosen. But it takes several months to get geared up. What was explained to us in committee is that as they recruit for new judges for these applications, that the pool is not large because we now are not able to compete with the private sector. An attorney that has a good practice, because usually they're in the prime of their practice when they may elect to apply for a judgeship. And these salaries do not represent what a full-time practicing lawyer that has somewhere between 15 and 20 years of practice would be earning. So I think the comment that I would make to the body is that we want our finest practicing attorneys to be our judges, because I think they are making some of the most critical decisions for the people of Wyoming. And so for that reason, I'd ask you to support this bill. And at this time, Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 40. And ask for your favorable consideration. And what this addresses, Mr. Chairman, is on page 3, it was increasing the circuit court judge's salary so that they would be at the traditional representation of the Supreme Court judges, which is at about 78% of what Supreme Court makes. And so that made the difference there, which was increased it from $110,000 to $128,700. If there are no questions, I'll call the question on the Standing Committee Amendment 1.
Question being called. All in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 40 do pass, please say aye. All opposed say no.
No.
Senate File 40 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 86. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 86, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to public health and safety regarding greenhouse gas air quality regulation. This file was sent to the Minerals, Business, and Economic Development Committee number 9. They recommended it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Hunt, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanzer, Dave, signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Stubson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 86 do pass. By way of explanation, this is an issue that's been sort of percolating out there for a couple of years since the tailoring rule was issued at the federal level and the federal government began their efforts to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. And as part of that process, it's sort of, can be a complex process, but the state DEQ typically is the delegated authority for doing most of the permitting under the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. They have to submit a regulatory plan to the government that they okay. In this case, we, by way of statute, have said we are not going to regulate greenhouse gas. And because of that, we have a dual permitting system where an industrial facility that emits a certain amount of greenhouse gases has to go through their typical permitting process here in the state, and then they have to go through a secondary one in front of the federal authorities. What this bill does is it doesn't do away with that, but it takes a step in resolving some of the concerns regarding the federal permitting. And this is a bill that was both sides of the issue, those that really, really, really don't want regulation of greenhouse gases and those that want more streamlined permitting came together to agree upon. And what you'll see as you flip through the bill is a reference that there are a number of lawsuits outstanding on the greenhouse gases. So what this does is it essentially allows DEQ to move forward with what they would ordinarily do on rulemaking for issuing permits, but it doesn't allow them to issue permits. And it doesn't allow them to issue any permits unless and until that litigation is resolved and it's certified that it resolved, that is essentially the condition. And the authority to promulgate greenhouse gas regulations goes away if we prevail in that litigation or if the policy at the federal level changes and they decide EPA will no longer regulate greenhouse gas. So this sort of sets a trigger mechanism because there's about a 10-12 month period of doing this groundwork, and it allows them to go through that groundwork so that if eventually we lose the litigation and this body decides it's important to allow a single permitting system, we can do that. So it was done particularly, you'll see throughout the bill that repeatedly that we cannot be more stringent than they are at the federal level. And that's a very important component of this bill. And so that's, you take several months of discussion and boil it down into a couple minutes. That's an explanation of the bill. But it is a very important step forward because if we do not have a framework that allows efficient permitting in the state where all the states around us do, a lot of these industrial facilities likely will move over the border as they go through that. And let me do one final comment on the importance of the single permitting. If you go through the federal permitting and it is appealed, you cannot build. There is a stay and you're stuck until and unless there's a final decision on that appeal. If you go through the state process and there's an appeal, you can still move forward in building, and that's really one of the critical aspects to the businesses in Wyoming and why they want to see us move forward on this bill. So with that, I'd take any questions.
Madam Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my good friend from Natrona County did a good job of explaining this. I just want to give you just a quick practical overview. Since Wyoming gained primacy under the Clean Air Act, we have guarded that zealously. Since 1971, we have had primacy over permitting our facilities in Wyoming. And then the major what's called PSD program came in the 70s, we've always had primacy over every aspect of that program. And the reason we have guarded that so zealously is that we want the state of Wyoming to be in charge of regulating its air quality and regulating its facilities. And then this greenhouse gas issue came along, and we had the statute on the books that said we couldn't regulate greenhouse gases. And so what it does is all of our major industries, and even our minor industries, if they change their facility at all, like take a power plant. Some of our power plants have recently been going through permit modifications to add pollution control equipment, deal with visibility issues, all of that. Instead of just going to DEQ and going through one public comment process, one potential appeal process, this bifurcated system creates two opportunities. You have to go to DEQ for part of it. You have to go to Denver for the other part. Two public comment periods, two avenues for appeal, and as the important thing, as the good representative from Natrona County stated, if your federal piece is appealed, it stays the permit, which means you can't construct. You're stopped until that issue is resolved. And it just puts our major, every industry we talk about on this floor all the time is negatively impacted by this dual permitting. So I applaud everyone's willingness to come together, and just whatever you think about greenhouse gases, we can't put our major folks in such a bind. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to share that the main industry in my county was involved in preparing these regulations, and from our point of view, this bill is not about greenhouse gases. This bill is about state sovereignty and reacting to a federal government that is intruding in our daily lives. We have to protect our ability to regulate ourselves, and voting for this bill is a vote to exert our state sovereignty and our state primacy over regulating our air, just as we regulate our land and our water.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I must apologize for the lateness of my arrival, but the dentist had other things for me. Concerning this, I'd like to mention one case in southwest Wyoming that happened several years ago, more than 15. There was an environmental impact statement in southwest Wyoming in which the EPA exerted their power over air quality issues and basically told the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service, and it was the Forest Service that brought it into the issue, that they developed regulation in that oil and gas environmental impact statement. The state of Wyoming stepped in and said, you can't do that, because we have primacy over air quality. We do the regulations for air quality, not the EPA. And it was an issue that the BLM was trying to put in the EIS. They backed off in the court decision in the settlement before the court decision came up. And we have tried to do the same thing over the air quality issues in Yellowstone National Park, but the Park Service beats to a different drum. And they haven't been listening yet, but we haven't entered the court. Well, we haven't really stepped in on that and obtained the rules. But anyway, it's important. I strongly urge you to pass this.
Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman or Vice Chairman Stubbs' motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 86 be passed. Please say aye. All opposed say no. Senate File 86 is passed Committee of the Whole.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 84. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 84, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to counties, county commissions, special expertise. This file was sent to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass. Eyes, Bird, Greer, Hunt, Kasparic, Lockhart, Nunes, Roscoe, Stuffson, Swanitzer, Dave, signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Stubson, Vice Chairman Stubson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 84 do pass. And for a further explanation of the bill, I'll turn it over to the good representative from House District 27.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 84 is a result of a lot of the resource management plans we're seeing around the state of Wyoming dealing with their cooperation with the federal government and their dictate on how we'll manage our lands. The cooperating agencies are our county commissioners, and under the rules and regulations, they're to be present to help work through these plans in the initial stages and provide a great deal of guidance. And you know, they're deemed to have the expertise to do this. The problem that we've been experiencing, or our county commissioners as a cooperating agency have been experiencing, is a pushback from some of the federal agencies regarding what actually are their expertise. And this was experienced in the Bighorn Basin, dealing one specific instance with the characterization, or lands with wilderness characterizations. This file, the Senate file, is brought to us to make it very clear in statute that our county commissioners do have expertise, so that they have a defense when they start to receive this resistance. Just the bill, just very simply, first adds a provision to 183504, which are the duties and generally for our county commissioners, powers and duties, and just simply provides that the Board of County Commissioners may represent the county as a cooperating agency with special expertise in matters relating to NEPA and in federal land planning, implementation and management actions. We've also added then section 185208, which is a generalization of what their expertise are. And we could add and add and add to this list, but it was felt that this list was what is necessary to provide the adequate, I guess, line in the sand, so to speak, in these matters. And so with that, I'd encourage your support and be more than happy to answer any questions that I can.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a good piece of legislation, but I just do have one question for the committee. Was there any discussion about adding, there's two levels. You can participate as a cooperating agency or as a coordinator, I believe, which is a higher level of participation. It actually allows you to sit at the table and make policy decisions on the plan. Was there any discussion about adding that into this piece of legislation? Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, to the extent I can answer that question, I can answer the question that we did not have any discussion in the committee meeting on that particular issue, and that this bill was addressed specifically at that issue of special expertise as it relates to a cooperating agency. I actually know a couple people I can ask and answer your question later.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice Chairman Stubson's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 84 do pass, please say aye. All opposed say no. Senate File 84 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye. All opposed, no. The motion carries.
meeting clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 17, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 8, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 30, recommended do pass. Senate File 35, recommended do pass. Representative Levin moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Senate File 33, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 62, recommended do pass. Senate File 25, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 47, recommended do pass. Senate File 10, recommended do pass. Senate File 40, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 86, recommended do pass. Senate File 84, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Daniels, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 27. Respectfully report sent back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. This bill, signed Representative Brown, Chairman.
Committee announcements. Your committee number 12, Rules, will meet Thursday, March 1st, 2012, upon adjournment in room 302 to consider Senate File 38, Revisers Bill. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately in H-10 for consideration of the following bills. Senate File 52, Senate File 78, Senate File 57, and Senate File 90.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. Committee, pay attention, 7:30 a.m. in room H-10, where we will take up the following bills. Senate File 79, Wildlife Trust Challenge Account Extension, carried over from today. Senate File 89, Engrossed, Pioneer Hunting Licenses. Senate File 43, Engrossed, State Park Acquisition of Lands. And Senate File 71, Engrossed, Aquatic Invasive Species. Oh, this is Friday, excuse me.
Chairman Oway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess. We're going to talk about Senate File 83, Cigarette Manufacturing, Senate File 82, ATM Fees, and if there's time, we'll look at Senate File 48, Engrossed, Professional Engineers and Surveyors Practice Act.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, March 1st at 8 o'clock a.m. to consider the following bills. Senate File 2, Engrossed, Property Exempt from Execution. Senate File 81, Engrossed, Medicaid Fraud Recovery. And Senate File 99, Guardian Ad Litem Program.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet in 10 minutes in room 302, where we will discuss Senate File 34, Engrossed, Medicaid Option Study, and Senate File 58, Health Insurance Exchange Study.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet Thursday, tomorrow, March 1st. 15 minutes after adjournment, we will consider Senate File 68, Time Limits for Veteran and Dependent Tuition and Fees. And then after that, House Transportation will discuss interim topics.
Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Your committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet tomorrow morning, Thursday, March 1st. Note the time, 7 a.m., room H11, to consider Senate File 19, Predator Management District's Management, Senate File 49, Terms for Youth Board of Agriculture Members, Senate File 55, Purchase of Federal Lands, Senate File 18, Reimbursement for Livestock, Senate File 65, Applied Agriculture Research Funding Program, and we'll also have a discussion of interim topics. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet Friday morning, March the 2nd at 8 a.m. in room H11 to consider the following bills. Senate File 77, Expenditure of Public Funds and Government Competition. Senate File 95, Emergency Medical Services Special Districts.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Appropriations Committee 2 will meet upon adjournment. We will be hearing re-referred bills, Senate File 42, Large Project Funding, Senate File 36, with State Parks, the LX Bar, and then with Senate File 12 and 14, Minerals Committee dealing with nuclear research, etc.
Any other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good work today, ladies and gentlemen. We've done a yeoman's work today. I will tell you that there are 4 people on the floor who are not feeling well, so please take care of yourselves. General file for tomorrow will be Senate File 46, 29, 41, 27, 85, 67, and such other bills as are reported out of committee. One last reminder about deadlines. The last day for bills to be reported out of committee is Friday, and the last day of committee of the whole is Monday. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Thursday, March 1st, 2012.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House stand adjourned until Thursday, March 1st, 2012, 10 a.m.